Good morning. So, last time, we talked about kernel and user mode. So this was a hardware mechanism by which we let the operating system do some things, but didn't let normal programs do those things. And this allowed the operating system to coordinate how things like the processor and I/O devices were shared between programs without us needing to worry about a broken or malicious program interfering with that. And the basic idea is that we have certain instructions and other operations, like accessing some memory locations, that will only work in kernel mode. And if you try that in user mode, an exception happens. And how do we make sure only the OS run in kernel mode? We switch to kernel mode on an exception, and when we return from an exception, we reset back to the old mode. Now, since some operations only work in kernel mode, we need a way for programs to request those operations because printing something to the screen might involve a privileged instruction doesn't mean programs don't want to do it. So we have this mechanism we call a system call, where the program will run a special instruction to trigger an exception. And we saw a typical way for these to work is that they might look a lot like a function call, but the actual details are decided by the OS. The OS just has a handler that runs, and it decides what registers to look at and so on, kind of like when you have a function, you decide what registers to look at for your argument. Probably you follow a convention, so people calling you don't get surprised about what they have to do. And the same thing applies to these system calls. The one big difference from normal function calls is that, well, we just said, I made a system call. We don't really have a way of specifying what type of operation we want unless we add that. Linux decided to use REX for this. We think of function calls. We specified that when we called a particular function. We had different functions we could call. System calls generally don't work that way. We have to add that ourselves as an operating system author. So then we talked about virtual memory. We mentioned we had this address translation scheme where we got the addresses the program saw, which we called virtual addresses. And these are every single address the program can possibly use. It's a virtual address. It goes through this translation, this mapping in the processor, that turns it into what we call a physical address, a real address that actually goes to the caches and the memory. And we needed to decide how this translation was being represented, and we talked about one scheme for doing this called virtual memory. And in this scheme, we divide up memory into pages. We divide up both the virtual addresses into pages and the possible physical addresses into pages. Our pages are always a power of two size. This means that we can, like with caches, use this trick of looking at certain bits of the address to determine which page it is, rather than doing something really annoying like division or modulus. And because we do that, the address gets divided into a page number and a page offset. So the page number is which page starting at 0 in either our virtual page addresses pages and our physical addresses pages, and the offset is the location within a page. And we just map whole pages worth of virtual addresses to a corresponding page of physical addresses. And we have to decide which goes to which, and we said we're going to store that in a big table. So we'll just have a table, one row for each virtual page, saying which physical page, if any. So questions about these things we covered last time? Yes?
Could you go over question 4?
The question is, can I go over 4 in the quiz? Okay, so let me pull up the quiz. Question 4. So when a program reads input from the keyboard, what happens? So we talked about that the program can't actually read directly from the keyboard, so it's going to ask the OS for help. And when we do this, the OS, this code runs in kernel mode on behalf of the program, but it's not the program's code. It's none of the code that's in your executable, none of the code in the libraries that you included in your executable. It's just, those libraries made system calls. Those system calls trigger code that exists in the OS to run in kernel mode on your behalf. So none of your program's code, none of the stuff in your executable actually runs in kernel mode, but stuff runs on your behalf in kernel mode. Kind of like, We think of your web browser. If you talk to a remote web server, your web browser is not running on that web server, but stuff is running there on your behalf. And the way the program asks to get this input is it triggers an exception to ask the OS to please retrieve this input for me in some way. And the input is not stored in the page table. We mentioned the page table just stores the mapping from virtual to physical. That's not keyboard input. It's not stored in the table itself. We're going to access memory that's going to use the table, but the information in the table is not actually data. And the last part, so if it's not available, we're going to make a system call saying, hey, I'd like to get keyboard input. Wake me up when there's some, and the operating system will put us to sleep. The mechanism by which the operating system runs us again is that the operating system has to run first and decide, oh, I should run that program that was asleep earlier. The operating system is always the first to run. The processor doesn't know how to run our program directly. So that answer people's questions, follow-ups? Yes. So the question is the code that runs in kernel mode always on the behalf of my program? No. So it could be on the behalf of another program. So for example, if your program is running printing stuff, computing something, and some data comes in from the network for the web browser, some code will run to handle that data. You would probably say it's on the web browser's behalf. And some code might run on no one's behalf. Just to deal with things in the machine, booting up the disk or something like that.
Sorry, does your program's code never run in kernel mode?
The question is, your program's code never run in kernel mode? Yes. So unless you're writing part of the operating system, like what you might call a device driver, which is a component that is the part of an operating system that knows how to talk to a particular kind of device, unless you're writing something like that, that's an operating system component, your program does not run in kernel mode on any standard OS. And the reason why is that if we let you run in kernel mode, you can do everything. And that's not something we want to allow programs to do. Yes? Can I explain question two? Sure. So the question here is, when a program attempts to read from memory location it's not permitted to access, what will the processor do? And this only had one answer very deliberately and was not a select all that apply. And the processor will trigger an exception in this case. And B is the first step of handling an exception in the processor, well, after saving the program counter, is what the processor needs to do to handle an exception. The other things are things that, A and C, are things the operating system might do in response to an exception. C is a very common thing that Unix-like systems do. You probably know of some systems which don't do that, like, say, your phone, doesn't work that way, or your Windows system. And the mechanism for doing that involves running the OS and the OS telling another program and the other program printing that message. It's not nearly as direct. So I don't think it's the best answer from that aspect. The thing the processor doing is B, and C is this long sequence of events afterwards that happens. Is that answer your question? And it doesn't happen everywhere. You have used systems where programs do that and something else happens. Or if you're running, but they're pretty common, but the biggest thing is it's not the most direct consequence of that event. And doesn't always happen. Yeah? Can I explain when the processor stops doing something and the OS takes over when there's an exception? So for two or just more generally?
So
for two, the processor's trying to run an instruction and it figures out, wait a moment, I don't know how to access memory for this instruction. I can't run this instruction. So what it does then is it first finishes up every instruction before it, if it's an out-of-order processor. And then it says, since I can't run this instruction, I'm going to undo any partial effects of this instruction and I'm going to ask the OS for help, because if I can't run this instruction, I can't keep going in the program. So then it does its lookup in this table the OS set up at boot to figure out what part of the OS do I want to run, and it saves what instruction it stopped at, so the OS can like use it to debug it, and then jumps to that table's location. Does that answer your question? Question, the table is the OS stuff. So the table we're referring to is what we call the exception table. So this is just an array of pointers to OS functions that handle each type of exception. Other questions?
Is it always called a seg fault when an array is not in the address space?
Question, is it always called a seg fault when an array is not in address space? No, it is definitely not. Yes. Question, how do we know if...
So it's like for question, so for part, for the answer A, like, because it's like the OS is running behalf of it, right?
Yes. So question is, why would I say it's not the program's code? So one way I'd say that is that it's not going to be code that you'll ever find in the executable. So how would we know if we would for how would we know if we find stuff that's in? So as a general rule, we cannot run non-OS code in kernel mode because it can do anything, right? We don't want anything, like if I'm logged into, say, portal, I don't want anything that can happen when I do an array out of bounds, you know, or something else crazy to break other people's programs. So I can't let any of that code run in kernel mode. Does that answer your question? Yeah. I'm giving examples of the types of exceptions. So, like, I had an example of, like, out of bounds access.
Well, this is the slide that says, like, explains the asynchronous and synchronous with, like, interruptible words, traps, and faults.
Yeah. So I had that there to indicate what would happen on to indicate something that is commonly called on a Unix system. On that slide, just so you knew what it was, but that is not the only thing that happens. And yeah, and I would say printing that message is something that is done by your shell. So, like, even on Unix, if you aren't running the program in your shell, you won't see that message. It won't be printed. So, like, if you start it graphically or, you know, run it in the background and close your shell, you won't see it. Yeah. It says directly.
Right. So what happens is the exception handler runs, and then the...
Yeah, and the exception handler, because it's written by the OS, can look up, oh, I promised this program earlier that it would run on a key press, so I'll run it now.
So I'm just kind of wondering, would you still call that in some way? Like, the OS indirectly?
Yes. So it's indirectly, or the OS arranges that it will run the program when a key press occurs. Yeah, but the OS is always the first thing that runs before, because we can't, the processor doesn't know how to context switch.
Okay.
Like, that's the big thing. The processor cannot context switch itself. It needs the OS to do that. The processor isn't told, like, where are registers stored. Like, all it sees is that the OS did a bunch of moves. Yeah. For here, in quiz question 5 and 6, the virtual and physical page numbers were distinct. this is just a coincidence. But was mainly done so because, you know, I wanted to make sure if people answered assuming that there was no change that I didn't, that we would know. But yeah, it's just a coincidence. They can definitely be the same or different. Doesn't, you know, just what ends up happening. Yes? Can I go over 5 and 6? So in this case, our page offsets are 8 bits, and our virtual page numbers, therefore, are the 4 bits. Conveniently, 8 bits is 2 hexadecimal digits, and 4 bits is 1. So for this address 742, the page offset is the most least significant 8 bits, which is 42, and the page number is 7. I look up virtual page number 7. I know it's virtual because this is a address the program accesses. And I see that it is valid and physical page number 3. So I put 3 in place of the 7, and that's how I got my address. Can I answer your question? Yes. And back there? Can I go over number 1? Question, so two processes are sharing a single core processor. In lecture we mentioned the way we're going to do this is that we're going to split time between the processes. The OS is going to run and switch pretty rapidly, so it looks like they're kind of running at the same time to a human. And part of this, the OS is going to maintain independent registers for each of them by doing this context switch thing. So they'll have separate values for their registers. They won't always be on the processor's registers, but they'll have independently maintained values. The OS will handle that process of maintaining them. If input happens, the OS knows what the input is for, and often it will be for a program that's not currently running, especially because if you like ask to read input from the keyboard, you probably can't run anymore right now until you get input. They have separate address spaces we mentioned, and we mentioned the address spaces can assign the same address in two different programs for things, and that's okay because we'll switch the page tables when we run one versus the other, and they could have two different mappings for a particular virtual page, and that's fine. And for this, for D, I gave credit for any answer because we didn't go over how out-of-order processors handle this in enough detail, but generally this is true, even in out-of-order processors as typically designed, that, you know, we're going to run one, then run the other separately, and we're going to do that, in fact, with enough distance that even an out-of-order processor, we're not going to be running have some instructions of one pending while the other is started. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
From the lecture on Tuesday, there was a part about
Yeah. So it might crash because, you know, it depends on whether that address happens to be allocated or not. And we had no reason for program B. So the question, this is the memory production slide. We said we had something at 10,000 in program A, and program B tried to write to 10,000. And we didn't know whether there was anything at 10,000 for program B. If there was, it wouldn't have crashed. If there wasn't, it would have crashed. Or if there was, but it was something important, it could also have crashed, like if you overwrote, like, you know, a return address that happened to be stored there, or some global variable that that matters. Does that answer your question? Okay. And where is here? Here we are. Okay. So that was a lot more of that. So last time, I think we finished up talking about, we have this idea that in addition to storing in our page tables this mapping, you know, virtual page to physical page, we can store extra information about what we should do on those memory accesses. One of these things is to implement this kernel mode only idea that we can set parts of memory to be only accessible in kernel mode. And the way this works is the processor needs to do this lookup anyways. In addition to checking the valid bit, it checks this kernel mode only bit depending on whether we're in kernel mode or not. So another thing that commonly comes up when we're doing sort of this, you know, memory mapping thing when we're running multiple programs is that, you know, sometimes we'll have multiple copies of the same program. This is pretty common. So one obvious example is like on Portal. You know, if I'm running Emacs and someone else is running Emacs, we would like to have two copies of Emacs loaded, it looks like, and they should have, you know, separate data, because the files that, you know, one user has open and the files the other user has open are different, and, you know, they shouldn't be interfering with each other. Yes. So the question is, on this kernel mode only slide, is this kernel only bit some part of the physical address? No. So this is just an extra bit in the table that is not part of the physical page number or any other part of the physical address. Just like the valid bit is not part of the address in any way. Okay, so back to our example. So let's say we have two copies of Emacs running on the side by side. And for what we've seen so far, what it would look like we do is that we'd have, you know, these would have different page tables and they point to all different addresses. But that would seem like kind of a shame, because if you look here, we have this big section of code and data that should be the same. It should always be the same, because this is like sort of code and constants from the Emacs executable. And you might say, let's do this shortcut of just make loading them to be exactly the same. And we can absolutely do that, but there's a problem. So let's say, you know, I'm using Emacs and I trigger a bug in Emacs where it does an array out of bounds access. And it tries to write here. That would be very bad, because this would break someone else's copy of Emacs that's running at the same time. So my copy of Emacs has a bug, it crashes its, you know, code. You know, you think that's not a big problem, but if it breaks other people's copies of Emacs, that's really annoying. And means that we probably couldn't actually load just one copy of this shared data. And operating systems really want to be able to do that, and we have some help from the hardware to make this possible. So commonly you'll see that page tables, in addition to having like the kernel access information, will have bits to indicate, can it be accessed, can it be written to, and can it be executed. They're going to be enforced in the same kind of way. So for the writable bit, if the access we're trying to do is a write, you know, we'll trigger an exception if the writable bit's not set. If for an executable bit, if the access we're trying to do is to load an instruction, we'll trigger an exception if the executable bit isn't set, and so on. So we can add these other similar permission bits to page tables to help the OSs do things such as, you know, have two copies of the same code and not need to worry about, you know, one of the programs overwriting it. Yes?
Is the write bit with respect to only one user?
Question is the write bit with respect to only one user? So this is stored in the page table. So if the OS wants it to be always not writable, you need to set it consistently in every page table that points to that physical page. And each instance could be different. Probably shouldn't be, but it's up to the OS to decide how to make it consistent. Yes? So which bits would we want to be true to Emacs? So we'd want, I've been kind of vague about like 0 or 1 here, because it varies between processors what they do. But presumably, write being 1 is writable, we want it to be 0 for that shared data and 1 for the writable stuff, like, you know, the heap that wouldn't be shared. And for the executable stuff, we'd want it to be 1 executable for this stuff and probably 0 for the rest. Other questions? Okay. Yeah.
And so then if you were trying to write to match or something and it were 0 on the table, that would trigger an exception?
Question. question. If we tried to write to Emacs or something that would, and it were zero, that would be trigger an exception? Yeah. So any violation, any case where any of these permission bits don't work out, or the valid bit isn't, doesn't make sense, you know, a zero, are going to trigger an exception. So just, you know, rather than just, so the way, one way you can think about it is rather than just checking the valid bit, the processor is going to also check all these other bits at the same time. Yes.
So the execute equals one, meaning you have to start executing from the beginning of memory, or can some other...
It's a question, what execute equal one mean you have to start executing there?
Program execute.
So execute equals one means that if we're fetching an instruction, it's allowed to be from that page. If it's zero, it would not be allowed. So if you take security, you'll learn that this is a mitigation for some of these simpler ways of exploiting buffer overflows. Is setting thing memory is not executable when you don't need it to be executed. And I say mitigation because it doesn't actually solve the problem, but it mitigates it a little bit. Yes? In what scenarios do we check the page table permission bits? So this is done on every single access. So like with the kernel mode bit, every single access, we're going to do this translation and check all those bits. And if you're concerned that this seems really slow, we'll get to that next week. Your question?
So if your page table has like the same table has like same entry has two different data for two different programs.
The question in the page table, can the same entry have data for two different programs? No, because the page table is assigned to one program. The whole table is for one program. So in the case of our Emacs here, we'll have one table that represents this, and one table that represents the other copy of Emacs that's run. Other questions? Okay. So let's talk a bit about sort of address translation at a sort of as far as address space sizes. So sometimes we'll refer to the size of addresses. And so far, it seems like the size of virtual addresses is the size of a pointer. So if we have 64-bit pointers, we have 64-bit virtual addresses. If we have 32-bit pointers, we have 32-bit virtual addresses. But quite frequently, not all of a pointer is used, especially on 64-bit systems. So for example, on 64-bit x86, typically only 48 bits of a pointer is actually used. So there's a bunch of bits in the pointer which need to have a fixed value, typically a copy of the sign bit of the pointer, which is used. And we'll talk about the virtual address size. When we talk about the virtual address size, we'll say it's 48 bits, because those are the only bits that are actually used for the mapping, even though, yes, the pointers are bigger. So that's how I'm going to use terminology. So we can have 16-bit pointers with 13-bit virtual addresses, or 64-bit pointers with 48-bit virtual addresses, because we don't need to use the entire pointer. And this is a common thing that will happen, because we really want our pointers to be, you know, something like 64 bits, but we often don't actually want to have page table entries for that size. And address space sizes, when we say the size of a physical or virtual address, it's the amount of stuff that can be addressed, the amount of unique useful addresses. This is not necessarily, I guess, unique addresses, which is not necessarily, you know, the amount of memory. So if my machine has 3 gigs of memory, I'm not going to say I have a 3 gigabyte physical address space. I'm going to have some number of physical addresses, and not all of them are going to be are going to correspond to actual RAM, but we're going to say our physical address size is the number of unique addresses I can generate that could go to memory, you know, or not. So it's the sort of size, the number of unique addresses we get out of the mapping, not necessarily that all of them are actually like installed as actual usable memory. Yes. So the question is, there a virtual address space and a physical address space? Yes. So when we're talking about address space, spaces. Generally, we'll talk about a virtual address space, which is the program's view of it, and the physical address space, which is what it looks like after the mapping. Yeah?
So are those always separate?
Question, are those always separate? I mean, they're connected by the page table. When we talk about measuring the size, we'll measure the size of the virtual or the physical separately, which is what this is about, because commonly you'll say, oh, we have a, 32-bit virtual address space, but you know what they mean. And they're just talking about the size of the virtual side of that, regardless of whether all 2 to the 32 of those virtual addresses are going to ever be useful in a program you're running. So you can have a 32-bit virtual address space and a 20-bit physical one. And if that's the case, then, well, you would have 2 to the 32 unique addresses, but you only have 2 to the 20 things they can map to. Okay, so let's start with doing some exercises here. So let's say I have 32-bit addresses and 2 to the 12 byte pages, 4096 bytes, happens to be the size of pages on most x86 systems. How many virtual pages does this imply? Who'd like some more time? Okay, a bunch of people. Okay, who'd still like some more time? Couple people. Okay, so let's see here we are. So who thinks we have, let's go, say more than 2 to the 10, that's 1,024 pages. More than 2 to the 15, that's about 16,000 pages. More than 2 to the 17. More than 2 to the 18, 2 to the 19, 2 to the 20, more than 2 to the 21 or more? Okay, so it looks like we have pretty good consensus. So I get 2 to the 20. So how do I get that? So one way we can get that is I have 32-bit addresses. That means I can access 2 to the 32 bytes of stuff. I can have unique names for 2 to the 32 bytes. Not all of them will necessarily actually map to something. So 2 to the 32 bytes divided by 2 to the 12 bytes per page gives me the number of pages. This is 2 to the 20. So that's one way I can figure it out. Another way I could figure it out is I have 2 to the 12 byte pages, which means my addresses have a page offset of 12 bits because I need 12 bits to determine which of those 2 to the 12 bytes I'm at in a page. And I have 20 bits left over for the virtual page number. So if I have 20-bit virtual page numbers, I have 2 to the 20 of them. Questions about how I figured this out? Yes?
I think it's possible to do it like step by step.
So which method do you want?
First method.
So 32-bit virtual addresses means I have 2 to the 32 possible bytes. If I had 1-bit virtual addresses, I could access byte 0 or byte 1, 2 to the 1 bytes. If I had 2 bits, I can access byte 0, 1, 2, 3, 2 to the 2 bytes. So 2 to the 32 is sort of how that generalizes for 32 bits. So I have 2 to the 32 unique bytes that have a number. Not all of them necessarily have an entry in the page table that like is mapped to something, but we have 2 to the 32 unique bytes we can give a number to. And those are grouped into sets of 2 to the 12. So I'm just determining how many sets there are. 2 to the 32 divided by 2 to the 12. Remember algebra a little bit. You know, it's been a while. That's 2 to the power of 32 minus 12, which is 2 to the 20. Does that answer your question? Okay. So that's on that. So let's move on. Let's say I have the same size virtual addresses, 32-bit, and I have 30-bit physical addresses, and the same page size, and my page table entries are a physical page number, a valid bit, and a kernel mode bit. I'm not going to have any other bits in there. My question is, how big is this page table? How much space does it take up? Sure, yeah. Okay, who would like some more time? A couple people. And I guess sort of maybe the hint is that we saw what a page table looks like. That's what we want. So I think I'll stop here. So who thinks we have, so I have our option. So who thinks we have less than 128 kilobytes? Between 128 and 512 kilobytes? Or between 512 kilobytes and a megabyte? Between 1 and 2 megabytes? Between 2 and 4 megabytes? Okay, between 4 and 16 megabytes, more than 16 megabytes. So we have, most people have no answer. And the ones who do are really high. Okay, so let's work through this a bit. So here's what our page table looks like. And we've been told that in this example, we have our virtual page numbers, well, we worked out that there are 20 bits, or we have 2 to the 20 of these. So instead of having 4, we're going to have 2 to the 20 of these rows. And each of these rows, we mentioned, is going to have a valid bit, a physical page number. How big are physical page numbers? Well, by the same, we have 30-bit physical addresses, 12 bits of that are taken off for the page offset, so we have 18 bits left over. And we had a kernel mode bit. So we have 20 bits per row and 2 to the 20 rows. We don't store the virtual page numbers in the table because we just know what virtual page number it is by what row we're at, so we don't need to store that. So those aren't bits that are included. And the page offset isn't in the table at all. We just pass that through without it involving the table. So we get an answer of 2 to the 20 entries times 18 plus 2 bits per entry. This is in bits, not bytes. So if we want to figure out how many bytes it is, you know, 2 to the 20, 18 plus 2 is a bit more than 2 bytes per entry. And a bit less than 3. So it's about 2.5 bytes per row times 2 to the 20 rows, which is about 2.5 megabytes. So questions about how I figured that out? Yes? Where did I get this 18 plus 2? So this 18 here is because our hardware addresses are 30 bits in total, the bottom 12 of which is our page offset. So the rest of that is the physical page number, which is what we're storing. And that would be 18 left over after we take out those 12 for the page offset. Does that answer your question?
What about the 2?
And the 2 is from the valid bit and the kernel mode bit. I'm just counting these bits. We have one of them, each of them once per row. Yes?
What's the
Can I explain the concept of a page? So we have 4 gigabytes of stuff, four gigabytes of virtual addresses, right? We can access, and we've just divided it up into equal chunks of 4 kilobytes. So addresses 0 through 4,095 are page 0, virtual page 0. Then 4,096 through, for about 8,000 are virtual page 1, and so on. And that's in our virtual pages. And we do divide up the physical addresses, which we have less of, the same way, into physical pages. So the pages are just, we split up the possible addresses into evenly sized chunks, starting at the beginning, address 0. And we're mapping whole pages of virtual addresses to physical addresses. Does that answer your question? Question, do multiple addresses go into a page? Yes, because if you look at our lookup here, we only use these high bits of the address to determine what page it is. In this case, we have a lot more of them, but we still, still have a page offset. That's in the case of our problem here is 12 bits. Yes?
Is there no way to get a virtual address, a virtual address from a physical address?
Question, is there no way to get a virtual address from a physical address? We have not seen one. We have not seen one. I guess we have not seen one except for scanning the entire page table. That's the only way we've seen to do that. OSs in practice often have ways of doing that, but that's because they make the page tables. So they could have other data structures to track that information. Yes?
Can you explain the 12?
Can I explain the 12? The 12 comes from our pages are 2 to the 12 bytes. So the same idea as when we said like cache blocks were 64 bytes, so we had 6 bits to determine where in the block we were. In this case, 2 to the 12 bytes, we need 12 bits to determine where on the page we are. Okay. Other questions? Okay. And let's just, since we know how pages are, let's split this address into a page number and page offset. Okay, who needs some more time? Okay, so anyone tell me what the page offset is? Any volunteers? Yes? Okay, 6, 7, 8, yes. This is the page offset, and the rest is the page number. And we determined that was the page offset because we know it's 12 bits, because we have 2 to the 12 bytes in a page. We need to determine, are we at the beginning of the page, all zeros, or the end, all ones in binary. And 12 bits is 3 hexadecimal digits, and it's always the least significant, because if two things are adjacent to each other, they're most likely in the same page. Questions? So let's get back to a question raised here. So we have 2.5 megabytes for this page table here. And these sizes are kind of like the sizes you would get on 32-bit x86 and are way worse with 64-bit. And 2.5 megabytes seems awfully problematic to store on a processor. If we think of caches, we typically have cache sizes which are like 32 kilobytes. Where can we have storage for 2.5 megabytes? And the answer is going to be in memory. So what processors will commonly do is we're going to have a way of representing a page table entry, so one of those rows of the page table, as byte bits in memory, and we'll choose a layout. So in this example, we've chosen just arbitrarily that we're going to use 16 bits, so 2 bytes, to represent a page table entry, and we're going to just say bit 15 of that 16-bit number is the valid bit, bit 14 is the kernel bit, bits 4 through 13 are the physical page number, and so on. So this is just a way so we can put those rows as bytes in memory, because even though like we've divided them up into single bits for different things. And once we've decided on that, rather than having the table stored separately, we're going to have the OS set what we'll call the page table base register, which will be a pointer to where the table is in memory. And it's just going to be an array, in this case, of 16-bit numbers that are formatted according to that design. So somewhere in memory, in this physical memory, why physical? Because, well, we can't figure out where it is, where the virtual addresses are without this page table, so it better be a physical address. We can't have a chicken and egg problem. We're going to store these numbers, and the processor is going to say, okay, if you want to access page 0, I know the valid bit for page 0 is the most significant bit of that because of what I decided is the layout I'm going to use. Next is the kernel bit, then is our physical page number, and so on. And it's just going to be an array of entries. So if I want to go to a particular virtual page, I'm going to take the virtual page number and use that to decide what array element of this array I go to. So if we're looking up virtual page 3, I'm going to go not to where the page table base register points, but I'm going to go forward by 3 entries first. Yes. So each array element is a number which we'll interpret according to this layout we decided on. And in a real processor, the documentation will like have some picture kind of like that, saying, here's the layout we've decided on that you have to use. Yes?
Is this layout unique for a single program or for everything?
So question, is this unique for a single program? So each program would have its own page table. So the OS's process of switching from one program to another would be to set a new page table base register value to pointing to an array that was set up in advance for the program.
But is this way of dividing the page table unique? Or can different programs have different number of physical page bits?
Oh, the question is that would the format of this vary between programs running on the same system? Generally, no. There might be some exceptions, but usually it will be the same. The format will be the same for every program, but they'll have distinct tables. Yes?
So why are there unused bits?
The question is, why is there unused bits? So in this case, I want to store this array in a way that's convenient to access in memory. To make it convenient, I need to have it be a whole number of bytes. And when I did that, I had bits I couldn't use. And this happens very commonly on real processors, that they'll want to have it be an array of like, you know, 8-byte things, and they'll have some bits left over. That just happens. Yes? Yes. Question is, the page table base register part of the context? Yes. And this is how we'll represent the address space and how we'll switch between it in a typical OS. Yeah?
Would you need 20 bits of physical page?
So the question is, don't we need 20 bits of physical page? So this is a different size addresses than what we were working with before. So if we wanted to support what we saw before, we would need a 20-bit physical page number, which means that our page table entries would be more than 16 bits. And we would also have larger virtual page numbers than what I'm showing here. So I'm showing a smaller example to keep the slide compact. So an observation you might make is that in the case example I showed you before, this still seems really big and really inconvenient, right? Storing 2 megs. We're going to have a solution that's going to make it smaller still, but we're going to start. But it's going to be an extension of this solution. So you might say this uses a lot of space in memory, so we're going to still store it in memory, but we're going to have a way of storing less stuff in memory. But we're going to get to that after we go through this in a lot of detail. Yes. This question is, how do I find the size of the page table for this example? So our page table entries are 16 bits. E, which is equal to, which is 2 bytes per page table entry. And I have, well, I can see here, I have 2^8 virtual pages. So I have 2^8 times 2 bytes is my page table size, which is going to be 2^9 bytes. Does that answer your question? I got the 2 bytes because I looked at the page table entry and said, oh, there's 16 bits. Does that make sense? And I had to include the unused bits because we need to put them there in order for this to work. Other questions? Okay. So this is a way which will work. We'll talk about making it more compact and faster after we talk about making this work. So if we have this sort of layout, the way that this is going to be used is that we're going to take a virtual address. We're going to divide it up into our page number and page offset. We're going to take our page number and multiply it by the page table entry size. So in our example previously it was 2, in real processor it's often going to be 4 or 8, or modern processor I should say. Then we're going to add the page table base register to that. So this is here, you might say, why are we multiplying by the size? So this is an array lookup. That's all this is doing here. This is an array lookup. We're looking up this index in the array. In the array that starts at this address. Exactly the way that, like, if you wrote A of 10, you know, the compiler would do that. But the processor needs to do it in this case. So once we do that array lookup, we're going to access the cache to get the value there. And then we're going to get our page table entry. We're going to split it up. One thing we're going to get out of it is we're going to get the physical page number that's going to be part of our address that comes out of this translation. And we're also going to get the valid bit and the kernel bit and possibly other permission bits. We're going to check all of those. And assuming that they don't cause a fault, we're going to add the page offset back to with our physical page number that we got to form our physical address, which we're going to send to the cache. Okay, so questions about this process? Okay, so something you may notice looking at this that we're going to have to address later. Oh, actually, naming thing I should mention right on the slide. So the part of the processor which does this lookup is called the memory management unit, or MMU. It's a vocab term you might see out in the real world. And one thing you'll notice about this is that this means that we've churned something where we, from having, you know, 1 or 2 memory accesses per instruction to now we have 2 or 4. And this is, you know, these are cache accesses, but they're not especially fast. And we're going to have to do something to make this actually fast where we're going to have more caching. So even if we're accessing like the data or instruction cache, it turns out that what I've shown you here is not fast enough So we're going to need to do something with more caching. We'll talk about that more caching next week. But we're going to go through this, you know, this is a version which works, it's just slow. And we'll talk about what real processors do to make this faster, because it is a pretty bad to access memory twice each time you want to access it once. So questions about how many memory accesses we have here? Okay, so let's do a bit of an exercise. So here, I'm going to have an exercise where we're going to have 5-bit virtual addresses and 6-bit physical addresses. And since they're 6-bit physical addresses, I can show you the entire contents of physical memory on this table. And we're going to start by doing we'll just do the first lookup here, accessing address 0x18. What value will I read? And oh, I should mention we have 8-byte pages, so physical page 0 is here, physical page 1 is here, and so on. So for 0x18, I'll do, this is going to be 11000 in binary. So I guess a first step is, who can tell me what the page offset in that address is? Yes. It would be 0. So how did you determine that? So you said it's the last 3 bits, and why 3?
Because the first 2 need to represent
the virtual page numbers. Okay, so you say, virtual page numbers are 2 bits, so that is one way we can figure it out. That's a good way. Another way we can figure this out is that we can say we have 8-byte pages. This is 2 to the 3 bytes, so which implies that page offsets is 3 bits. So we have our virtual page number is 11, and our page offset is all zeros. And we look this up, we get physical page 0. Physical page 0 is here. So the physical address is, so what is our, what are the components of our physical address? Anyone? Where are we going to build that from? Okay, you're saying that it's offset 0 of these 8 bytes. So the result is actually zeros. Here is that 0. The physical address, we compose it of a physical page number, which happens to be these here, all zeros, and our page offset, which happens to be all zeros. So we access address 0, and we read 0 as the actual value. Questions about how I figured that out? Yes?
Why did you highlight the 0x00 and the 0x04?
My question is, why did I highlight the 0x04 in the page number? So our first physical page is this here that I've highlighted here. So depending on the offset bits we had, we'll access some part of that. So if our address was 11111, we would access 77, for example. Some questions about this? Confusion? Okay, so let's do So here we have an example. So similar, here we have 6-bit virtual addresses instead of 5. And I have my page table entries stored in the memory. So my page table entries have a 3-bit physical page number as the most significant bit, a valid bit, and 4 unused bits. And I want to translate this address, and I have a page table base register. So rather than the table being separate, the page table is stored inside here as an array. And the array starts right here. So that this is the start of our array, address 20. And each page table entry is one byte. Okay, so as a first step for this, who can tell me how do I divide our virtual address into a virtual page number and a page offset? Yes. Okay. So you say there's 3 offset bits, and this in binary is this, is 11000. So this is our page offset, and the rest is our virtual page number. Okay. So what should our next step be after, now that we have our virtual address split up like this? What would be a good thing to do next? So the next step is to look up the page table entry. So previously, we just had a table in front of us. Here, we just have the bytes that represent the table, which are stored in an array that we know starts here. So this is the first element of the array. But we want to go to what index of the array? Well, 110, which is going to be index 6 of the array. So what byte is index 6? What's the address of that byte? 0x26, because this is an array of bytes. So 2, 4, 6. So this is the page table entry here. So that's our page table entry. So I need to decode this entry. So this is in binary is this. And we said that the 3 first bits are the physical page number. And then the next bit is the valid bit. So we check, is it valid? Yes, the valid bit is 1. And then we check the physical page number, and it's 111. And we're going to add that in place of the virtual page number. So our physical address is this in binary, which is going to be 38 in hex. So that's our physical address. We aren't done yet, because if we think about the process we're trying to imitate, we haven't done the last step of actually accessing the memory, right? We haven't we've got the physical address, but we need to access memory there. So to access memory there, we're going to look at address 0x38, and we're going to find out that we're going to access that 0xDC there. So that's the memory that we would access. Yes? Can I explain how I got to the physical address? So like our virtual address, our physical address is split up into a physical page number and a page offset. And when we translate from virtual to physical, the page offset always stays the same. So that's why I copied those zeros. If we started at address 31, I would end up with a 1 there, and therefore with 39 as my address. And the physical page number is what I got from the page table entry that we looked up in that array of page table entries. Yes?
So how did you get the 6 and took, go to 0x26 and then 5f6? Is that from the virtual page number?
So question, how did I use the 6 to go to 0x26? Yes, I used the virtual page number to determine which element of my array of page table entries, which is, this is the array. It's each one's a byte, it happens, because we were told in the question. And I went to index 6 because that was the virtual page number, which was at 26 we computed. Does that answer your question? Yes. How did I go from x6 to 111? This is 111010. Sorry. And so I used the page table entry format I was given in the question. That the first 3 bits, the 3 most significant bits, are the physical page number. So, and then the valid bit was next. And then there were 4 bits that we didn't use. Yes.
Why is the offset?
Why is the offset 000? Because it was that way in the virtual address. So if we started with a virtual address like 0x31, we would end up with an offset of 001 because when we did this splitting, we'd end up with a 1 in the page offset, and we copy that. Does that make sense? Or 39 would be the physical address. Yeah. So question, is there anywhere you can go to practice this? So the memory homework that's coming up, the first 6 questions are things like this. Which is the most obvious thing, there should be similar examples in the book. But yes, we're going over this for a reason, and the beginning of this class took longer than I thought it would.
Does PPN stand for page number?
Does PPN stand for page number? PPN stands for physical page number. Yes.
So for the rest of the memory homework, is that something we're going to learn later?
So the rest of the memory question, the rest of the memory homework is something we're going to learn later? Yes. So the second part of the memory homework is multi-level page tables. So here, which is going to be our solution for that this array of page table entries is very big sometimes. So we're going to make it much smaller by making it a tree data structure. And that's what the second part is about. Yes? Question? Question, when I OS31, I only had 3 bytes for each hex digit? I did not. So the hex digits are, I wrote out 1-1 for the first hex digit, I didn't write the leading zeros, and I wrote out 4 zeros for the second hex digit. And it happened that they didn't correspond to our number of bits of page offset, which I think was the confusion. Does that answer your question? Yes. So in the previous example, rather than having the page table in memory, it was just on the side, right? It was stored separately. So the difference between this example and the other one is that here I needed to go into my my memory to get that table rather than having it written out for me. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So other questions? So I'm over time, and I was expecting to cover a little more, but okay, we'll deal. And review this next time.